Blog Talk Radio.
So I'm gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You a fake, so I'm gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. God, please protect me if this shit go left. Cause I can cook a kilo by my goddamn self. In the kitchen, water whipping with the left. I don't know what man, but I know who got the milk. I feel like I'm a woman being milk. Cause I can lock a trap down by myself. You ain't no Gucci,
so then
hold your breath.
Holla, 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 everybody. Holla, holla, holla. How y'all doing today? Little tired myself, little tired. We had the Drunken Peasants debate last night. Myself and a conservative YouTuber who goes by the name Razorfish. Check that out if you haven't yet. It's weird because I just checked before. Apparently the the live stream on the Drunken Peasants YouTube channel, it looks like it cut off the first 15 minutes or so of the debate. I clicked on it and it just jumps right to me and him already in the midst of an argument. Whereas, you know, in the original video, TJ the Amazing Atheist did an intro and introduced some topics and yada, yada, yada. So, but anyway, check that out if you haven't yet. It was fun. I am a little tired though because that went on pretty late. But the show must go on because I have a lot of stuff to get to, so I'm going to explain to you just how much Donald Trump and the Republicans are draining the swamp. One of the things I love to say during the campaign when he would bring up the drain the swamp motto all the time is he's draining the swamp in your mouth. And that has been proven, so I will show you that. Then we have a really major development, big story, about the corruption of the Trump administration in terms of what's happening in Puerto Rico. So we'll discuss that as well. There's a lot to say on that front. Then we have some Republicans retiring because they don't like Trump, and I want to play you their, you know, his little speech. Jeff Flake, of course, I'm talking about, and then we'll discuss that. And later on in the show, marijuana legalization. Wait until you see the new poll numbers on that. Wowzers, 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 wowzers. All right, let's get started. Donald Trump and the Republican Party are really in the midst of draining that swamp. Mike Pence breaks tie as Senate votes to kill rule allowing class action suits against banks. What happened to the forgotten man will never be forgotten again. The forgotten man will never be forgotten again. I thought you were looking out for the little guy, for the average Joe. This is the exact opposite of doing that. The Republican-led Senate narrowly voted Tuesday to repeal a banking rule that would let consumers band together to sue their banks or credit card companies to resolve financial disputes. Vice President Mike Pence cast the final vote to break a 50-50 tie. The banking industry lobbied hard to roll back the regulation, which the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau unveiled in July. The rule would ban most types of mandatory arbitration clauses found in the fine print of agreements that consumers enter into when opening checking accounts or getting credit cards. The vote reflects the effort of the Trump administration and congressional Republicans to undo regulations that the Republican Party argues harm the free market. The measure now moves to President Donald Trump's desk for his signature. So arbitration, for those of you who don't know, that is basically like a private court system. So in other words, you get into a dispute with the bank, You know, you got fleeced to one extent or another. You say, all right, I'm taking you to court. Well, the fact that they rolled this back means you can't do that. What they end up doing is saying, oh, it's cool, you have a dispute, no problem. We'll resolve it, but just step over here into our own private court system. What? So it is that bank's idea of justice. That bank's own system that they set up where they pretend like it's objective and you can get, you know, the right answer that way, and you can perhaps get compensated for how much you were screwed over. But you're going to be shocked to find out that when it's arbitration, they overwhelmingly agree with the bank. Maybe because, you know, the bank set it up. So, I mean, think about what's happening with Wells Fargo, for example. How there was massive fraud where they opened a zillion accounts in people's names. So they would just open bank accounts in people's names. And then they were doing that so that they can report that they're still growing. And that would allow them to do fraud and boost their stock price in a manufactured way. So, you know, under this system, when you say, hey, me and my buddies, they opened an account in our name, and there were damages that were done here. We're going to take them to court. Under this rule that the Republicans rolled back now, they're saying, no, you're not allowed to. Oh, you have a dispute? Well, why don't you just go to private arbitration and work it out that way? And there's a reason why the banks have been pushing for this. There's a reason why they've been lobbying for this. Because it allows them to keep getting away with financial crimes. So it's hilarious the Republicans love to portray themselves as tough on crime. This is the exact opposite of tough on crime. When they say they're tough on crime, they mean like, you know, if somebody in the hood robs a liquor store, lock them up and throw away the key. Or God forbid, somebody's caught with a joint or a blunt, lock them up and throw away the key, mandatory minimums. But, you know, with Republicans, if you're talking about systemic torture that the U.S. government is involved in, illegal wars, you're talking about financial criminals, well, then they're on their side, and they're on their side because they pay their campaign contributions. So this is not a serious governing party. They're off the spectrum. They are so immensely beholden to big money interests that they do things where there's not even a theoretical argument that this is the way to go and that this makes sense. They try. They say, well, yeah, but free market. What does that even mean in this respect? Like, even under a rigid libertarian ideology, that doesn't mean you can't sue if there was fraud done or there was some sort of financial malpractice done. Like, even rigid libertarians would say, well, of course, if there's fraud or something and you're wrong, yeah, you should be able to sue. This is the Republican Party saying, no, I want to take that away because something free market, even though free market makes no sense to say that in this context. So it's just them 100% being on the side of financial criminals. That's all this is. The people who pay their campaign contributions and they do their bidding. It's just fucking pathetic, man. And then they have the nerve to portray themselves from time to time as a populist party. Donald Trump, the nerve to portray himself as a populist. You are not. You are the biggest establishment bitch boy under the sun. There you have it. How can they say stuff like drain the swamp? How can they say stuff like they're looking out for the little guy? This is the exact opposite. And by the way, you could put the clock on it. I've been saying this for the longest time. Everybody knows it. It's just a matter of time until we have the next disaster and crash. Because when you deregulate and you cut taxes for the rich and you let the people on Wall Street and the big banks do whatever they want because you think they're the smartest guys in the room, everybody knows that's just corruption. And they're not the smartest guys in the room. And they crash the economy with the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. So you let their greed run amok and eventually the chickens come home to roost. And they're making sure in every way imaginable to rig the rules so that when it happens again, there's still no recourse. And the servile government that represents corporate America will waltz in and bail out the people who crashed the economy again and use your tax money to do it. And then, God forbid, there's some sort of issue where you're directly wronged and you want to sue to try to get just compensation. They go, no, that's not even an option. That's not even on the table. Go to arbitration, where they'll tell you to fuck off. Make America great again. What they really meant, they didn't tell you this part, what they really meant is make America great again for Wall Street and big banks. Okay. Now, let's discuss what's happening in Puerto Rico. Ken Klippenstein of the Daily Beast exposed a major story of Trump administration corruption here. $300 million Puerto Rico recovery contract awarded to tiny utility company linked to major Trump donor. A tiny utility company linked to a prominent Trump campaign donor has been awarded the massive contract to help rebuild the crippled island. He says, Puerto Rico has agreed to pay a reported $300 million for the restoration of its power grid to a tiny utility company that is primarily financed by a private equity firm founded and run by a man who contributed large sums of money to President Trump, an investigation conducted by the Daily Beast has found. Whitefish Energy Holdings, which had a reported staff of only 2 full-time employees when Hurricane Maria touched down, appears ill-equipped to handle the daunting task of restoring electricity to Puerto Rico's more than 3 million residents. Much larger utilities are more commonly used following natural disasters on the scale of Hurricane Maria, which devastated the island last month. The private equity firm finances Whitefish HBC Investments, was founded by Joe Colonetta, who serves as its general partner. Federal Elections Commission data compiled by the Daily Beast shows Colonetta contributed $20,000 to the Trump Victory PAC during the general election, $2,700 to Trump's primary election campaign, then the maximum amount permitted, $2,700 to Trump's general election campaign, also the maximum, and a total of $30,700 to the Republican National Committee in 2016 alone. Colonetta's wife, Kimberly, is no stranger to Republican politics either. Shortly after Trump's victory, she gave $33,400 to the Republican National Committee, the maximum contribution permitted for party committees in 2016. Joe Colonetta is not the only Republican connection to the controversial Whitefish contract. On Monday, the Washington Post reported that Whitefish Chief Executive Officer Andy Tekmansky is friends with Trump Administration Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. Moreover, Whitefish is located in Zinke's hometown of Whitefish, Montana. So, to sum this story up, you have the absolute disastrous hurricane. Actually, there were 2 hurricanes that ravaged Puerto Rico. And in response to this, you know, the government, the serious people, FEMA, the ones who are supposed to be on top of this and the ones who are supposed to be able to take care of this and get everything up and running quickly in the wake of a disaster like this, well, they sat around and they said, how are we going to get this done? And somebody in Trump's inner circle, probably Ryan Zinke, goes, I know a guy who knows a guy. Yeah, maybe we do that. And then, you know, you have a situation where there were campaign contributions to Trump, to his administration, and the company and the person that did it, the person that was the head of the company that did it, it was a tiny company, a tiny utilities company. Well, what better way to pay back the person who gave you giant campaign contributions than to give them the job in Puerto Rico, even though they only had 2 full-time employees when this started, and so you're giving them the contract, they're ill-equipped. They're ill-equipped as a utility company to handle such a giant job. But hey, you gave the campaign contribution, so you get rewarded. This is exactly what pay-to-play corruption looks like. Remember when Trump nonstop went after Hillary Clinton for her pay-to-play corruption? By the way, accurately, of course she does pay-to-play corruption with the Clinton Foundation and otherwise. But that's exactly what this is, 100% what this is. Otherwise, why would you pick a tiny company that has two full-time employees to do a giant job like rebuild Puerto Rico and get their electric grid working? Are you kidding me? And by the way, some people have been wondering, rightly so, including myself. You know, you read the headline a week after Puerto Rico gets obliterated, 2 weeks after, 3 weeks after. And every time it's like 95% of people in Puerto Rico still don't have power. Fast forward a few weeks, 84% of the country still doesn't have power. And you're going, what on God's green? This is, we're talking about a U.S. territory. And weeks after the hurricane hits, about 80% of the island still doesn't have power. That wouldn't happen. And it didn't happen in Florida when they get hit by a hurricane, in Texas when they get hit by a hurricane, when they had the massive flooding from Harvey. That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Over 80% don't have power? That is ridiculous. Cuba, you know, the communist island, isolated, shut off from the rest of the world, they recovered significantly faster, and they got hit with a relatively equal amount of damage from the hurricane. So how is it that the U.S. empire-backed country, the U.S. territory, Puerto Rico, still has 80% of people without power all this time after? Here you go. This is how. Because you have nothing but pay-to-play corruption going on behind the scenes, giving people the contracts that don't deserve the contracts. And by the way, you know what this reminds me of? The war in Iraq. I forget the name of the movie. I think it's in Why We Fight, but... Yeah, I think it's in Why We Fight, but there was war profiteering going on in Iraq as well. So what would happen is, after the war in Iraq, or I should say during the war in Iraq, the Bush administration would give no-bid contracts to go in and do various jobs, whether it's rebuilding Iraqi infrastructure or whether it's setting up U.S. bases. And what would happen is, again, pay-to-play corruption. So whoever gave the campaign contributions, they're the ones who get the contracts, the no-bid contracts. So in other words, government's paying more than they actually have to because they didn't have companies bid to do the job for a more reasonable price. They just said, hey, we're going to pick you to do the job. No-bid contract. They always picked the people who did the financial campaign contributions to them, and then lo and behold, what happened? Well, one of the stories was, big story was, there was shitty wiring in U.S. bases, so some people got electrocuted as they took showers because you hired a company that wasn't good at doing this shit because of corruption. So, hey, they fucked up the wiring, and some U.S. soldiers died because they got electrocuted in the shower. Wow. Another thing. Some of the people that were picked to do stuff when it comes to water, they didn't purify the water correctly, and people got cryptosporidium and other parasites from the water because you hired people to be in charge of that had no business being in charge of that. That's war profiteering. That's what that's called. This is profiteering. Going to give a company with two full-time employees $300 million to rebuild a place with 3 million people. Well, there you go. That's why fucking 80% of people still don't have power there. This is fucking disgusting because they viewed this as an opportunity to do that. Hey, I'll pay back my donors by letting them do the thing in Puerto Rico. Meanwhile, the people are suffering. They're suffering on a daily basis there. You know, people love to talk about, oh, impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. And they bring up goofy ideas like Russia. No, it's not shit like that which is impeachment worthy. It's Trump violating the Emoluments Clause, which he did from day one. By the way, Hillary did from day one if she were to have been elected as well. And stuff like this. I mean, this is such obvious corruption. And the consequences are so damning. But this will barely be a blip in the radar in corporate media because they're idiots who can't keep their eye on the ball and focus on real-world problems affecting real-world people. By the way, Ken Klippenstein, he's a friend of the show, and Ken, fantastic job figuring out the details of this story. This really is some incredible work, and it's something that if we had a media that had a brain, this would be the number one story for weeks to come. Okay. All right, let's do one more before we take our first break. Let's go the retiring senator. Senator Jeff Flake, or as I call him, Senator Cornflakes, is retiring from the Senate when his term is up. He's a Republican from Arizona. He wrote an anti-Trump book and has been pretty vocal in opposing him in some respects. You know, I've done segments in the past, though, where I discuss Jeff Flake, and I say, don't fall for the trick. Because what he does is, as he agrees with Trump on every policy, he goes, sir, you are impolite and coarse in our discourse. This is not befitting of a gentleman. Obviously, we start offensive wars and deregulate everything in sight and do the bidding of Wall Street while we smile. And, you know, this is a guy who, he smells and looks and acts like a smarmy politician. He's very Ted Cruz-y in that respect. So let's watch a little portion of his speech here. This is him announcing that he's leaving, and he'll explain a little bit as to why he's leaving. And then I want to come back and give you some facts.
Mr. President, I rise today to address a matter that has been very much on my mind. At a moment when it seems that our democracy is more defined by our discord and our dysfunction than by our own values and principles, let me begin by noting a somewhat obvious point, that these offices that we hold are not ours indefinitely. We're not here simply to mark time. Sustained incumbency is certainly not the point of seeking office, and there are times when we must risk our careers in favor of our principles. Now is such a time. It must also be said that I rise today with no small measure of regret. Regret because of the state of our disunion. Regret because of the disrepair and destructiveness of our politics. Regret because of the indecency of our discourse. Regret because of the coarseness of our leadership. Regret for the compromise of our moral authority. And by our, I mean all of our, complicity in this alarming and dangerous state of affairs. It is time for our complicity and our accommodation of the unacceptable to end. In this century, a new phrase has entered the language to describe the accommodation of a new and undesirable order, that phrase being the new normal. But we must never adjust to the present coarseness of our national dialogue with the tone set at the top. We must never regard as normal the regular and casual undermining of our democratic norms and ideals. We must never meekly accept the daily sundering of our country. The personal attacks, the threats against principles, freedoms, and institution, the flagrant disregard for truth and decency, the reckless provocations, most often for the pettiest and most personal reasons, reasons having nothing whatsoever to do with the fortunes of the people that we have been elected to serve. None of these appalling features of our current politics should ever be regarded as normal.
So there's a lot to say about that. I mean, it's always amazing when these guys talk about, you know, the eroding of our democratic norms that should not ever be accepted as normal. But, again, like, under George W. Bush, no more habeas corpus, no more due process, torture all over the place, offensive wars against countries that didn't attack us, set up a giant surveillance state, get rid of your protection from unreasonable search and seizure and your right to privacy. I mean, the Constitution was obliterated. Like, they don't abide by almost any of it. So for guys like this to come out here and clutch his pearls and act like the eroding of our democratic norms, where the fuck were you, you know, under George W. Bush? Where were you even under Obama? I'm sure he disagreed with Obama, but he never – it's not like these guys ever disagree with guys like Obama in a way that makes sense, where they say, hey, man, we're now bombing in seven different countries. You didn't get approval. You didn't get Congress to approve that. That's, you have to do that under the Constitution. You have to get Congress to approve everywhere you go and start a new war. But no, they just added on to the authorization for use of military force under Bush and go, close enough, good enough. So guys like Jeff Flake, when somebody is eroding civil rights, civil liberties in the Constitution, but they do it in a way where they're still polite in civil discourse, he goes, oh, what a respectable person. But when you have somebody like Trump, who's a monster in every way George W. Bush was, but he also does mean tweets, that's when he's like, oh, my goodness. Sir, have you no decency? You should be torturing people and invading countries offensively without doing mean tweets. So that's what's always annoyed me about guys like Jeff Flake. But it was another level of annoyance this time around because there were so many people who are Democrats, and I saw it all over Twitter, who were praising Jeff Flake and saying, oh, yes, finally, Republicans standing up to Donald Trump. Welcome to the resistance. Somebody literally said that. Welcome to the resistance, Jeff Flake. Welcome to the resistance. So let me show you guys. I know it's difficult to actually try to be objective and look at their records, their fucking voting records, which is all that should matter when you talk about politics. It should be the only thing that matters when you talk about politics. But let's go ahead and take a look and see what Jeff Flake has been up to. Oh. Oh, wowzers. Would you look at that? Jeff Flake voted with Donald Trump 90% of the time. 90% of the time. 90% of the time. So Jeff Flake takes the, you know, are you really part of the resistance test? And he scores a fucking 10%. That's what he gets. It's like he sit down and took a test to determine, hey, are you really part of the resistance? Are you voting against him? And he got a fucking 10% on that test. And corporate Democrats are coming all over themselves, acting like this guy's a hero. You want some more specifics on Jeff Flake? He has a 100% anti-abortion voting record. He voted yes on deregulating Wall Street. He voted yes not only on banning gay marriage, but he wanted to make a constitutional amendment to say we will never have gay marriage. He wants to abolish the Department of Education. He voted yes on barring the EPA from regulating greenhouse gases. He voted no on paid family leave. He supported the Iraq War. He supported virtually every single outsourcing so-called free trade agreement. He voted to slash Medicaid and Medicare, and he voted to repeal Obamacare. So in every discernible way, Jeff Flake is Trump. He is Trump. He's Trump 90% of the time. But these idiots can't help themselves. There was a tweet, I forget the guy who said it, but he did a little tweet storm where he was like, you know, hey, can we have it both ways as people who are on the left? Like, can we say, like, hey, man, we want people to speak out against Trump. And then when guys speak out against Trump like Jeff Flake, and we're all like, but hey, man, you voted to cut taxes. Are we really being fair when we say that? Like, the level of political discourse you have to be stuck on to even entertain that thought is comically low. Like, you shouldn't be discussing politics on Twitter because you're simply an embarrassment. Because all that matters is policy in the realm of politics. Repeat after me. All that matters is policy when you talk about politics. They're not there to just give flowery speeches and go on Sunday shows and mislead you. Because you don't know fucking politicians lie with how they talk? You don't know that. You don't know that a speech counts for fucking nothing. Speech doesn't mean dick sacks. It means nothing. Doesn't mean anything. Because they can say one thing and vote the exact opposite way. And that's Jeff Flake. Oh, let me show you my Mick resistance. This man is coarse in how he speaks. Our freedoms are being eroded. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I voted with that 90% of the time, but I will wag my finger because I don't like his tone of voice and how he tweets. So if you are that dense that you can't keep your eye on the ball. These are the people who it's like, red balloon. They just fucking lose straight. Red balloon. Oh, my God, he said something about Trump that's not good. That doesn't mean anything, man. Because at the end of the day, if you're voting with the guy, your resistance is futile. Your resistance is a non-resistance. So, no, I don't give him fucking credit. No, I don't give Bob Corker credit. These guys are odious. Now, by the way, this is not me saying I don't give them credit. And it's like, hey, I am therefore bolstering Trump. No, my position is, quite clearly, motherfuck Donald Trump and his shitty votes and his shitty policies, and motherfuck Jeff Flake and Bob Corker and all these other assholes and George Bush and everybody else. That's my position. Fuck them both. Fuck them, fuck them, fuck them. That's my position. But unfortunately, what you see now is many silly people who go, he uttered a word against Trump. Hero, part of the resistance. So they bolstered Jeff Flake to put down Trump. How about you don't bolster Jeff Flake and you don't bolster Trump and you say, fuck both of them because their votes are horrendous. The resistance has to stand for more than just we don't like Trump. You have to stand for Medicare for all. You have to stand for free college. You have to stand for a living wage. You have to stand for ending the wars. You have to stand for legalizing marijuana. You have to have a set of beliefs. You have to have principles. You have to have policies that you know would improve people's lives. But no, it's just at the point now where, you know, I don't doubt that if Trump somehow, and this wouldn't happen, let's be clear, but if there was a 180 that he did tomorrow, he said, you know what, when I was going around the world and I was a celebrity and I had mentioned 5 or 6 times that I agree with single-payer systems and Canada's system is better than ours and Scotland's system better than ours, I still agree with that. So I want to do Medicare for all. I think many people in the resistance would go, ah, no, we should keep Obamacare. Trump is anti-Obamacare because he wants to do Medicare for all. That's the level that we're at. It's just the dumbest fucking... So anyway, fuck Jeff Cornflakes. I don't give a fuck that he gives a douchey speech where he pretends like, oh, the norms of society, they were gone under Bush and you loved it. You just don't like the style in which Trump does the same fucking things. So, and by the way, the real reason he's dropping out is he can't win. His poll numbers have tanked because he wrote a book that was like, I disagree with Trump, but I love every fucking policy he stands for. He wrote a book that was anti-Trump, so other Republicans were like, you go after my daddy? Don't go after my daddy. I like my daddy. So he can't win re-election in Arizona, so he's dropping out and is pretending to be a hero in the process. He's not a hero. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I've got a lot more to get to. We'll check in on our buddy Joe Manchin. And then another similar story. Ho, 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 George W. Bush is back in the news. And the way in which he is it's bad. Stay right there.
Yeah.
with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, renegade left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Welcome back, bitch.
With the left.
Chuck Schumer, you know, like one of the top, if not the top, right? The top Democrat in the country, praised Jeff Flake for stepping down and saying, I don't like Trump much. And, you know, this to me is exactly why we need Justice Democrats and why it's long overdue that Justice Democrats take over everywhere. Because how can we expect to get anything done? How can progressives and liberals, people on the populist left, expect to implement the policies that the American people want when the people who are supposed to be the resistance, guys like Chuck Schumer, he's effusively praising a guy who voted with Donald Trump 90% of the time. 90% of the time. And as I said on Twitter, Wall Street Chucky is praising Jeff Cornflakes. And, you know, if you're curious as to exactly why, well, you know, they both were in favor of the Patriot Act, both were in favor of the Iraq War, and both were against the Iran deal. So they probably bonded over their hideous backwards-ass votes. And this goes back to a point I've made a million times over. Whenever there's bipartisanship in the Senate or in the House, it's very rarely Democrats and Republicans agreeing to do something that the American people want. Usually when Democrats and Republicans, elected Democrats and Republicans agree, it's to continue to screw you and to push more wars or to push Wall Street bailouts or to push corporate welfare or to cut the social safety net. That's when they agree on shit like that, the Patriot Act and the Iraq War and being against the Iran deal. So Chuck Schumer, thank you for praising a guy that voted with Trump 90% of the time, that lets us know that it's all a game to you. You don't really believe anything you're saying. You don't really want to fight for Medicare for all. You don't really want to fight for free college. You don't want to fight for a living wage. You know, you are a hack. That's what you are. And that's why it's time for Justice Democrats to take over, because we run candidates that actually believe in Medicare for all, actually believe in free college, actually believe in a living wage and ending the wars and legalizing marijuana and doing a new deal and re-regulating Wall Street. So step aside, justicedemocrats.com/fight. If you're sick of Democrats who all it takes is one negative word about Trump from a Republican and all of a sudden the resistance, they're part of the resistance, even though they agree with him on almost every policy. Resist. Okay. Let's check in on our buddy Joe Manchin and see what he's up to. This is from the Washington Post. The Senate rejected an amendment Thursday that sought to block a key panel from raising revenue through drilling in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, a move that could make it easier for future oil and gas drilling to take place there. Senator Maria Cantwell, the top Democrat on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, offered a budget amendment that would have removed instructions to the panel to raise an additional $1 billion through federal leasing. It failed 48-52 on a largely party-line vote, with only Senator Susan Collins and Joe Manchin breaking ranks. Collins voted in favor of Cantwell's amendment, while Manchin opposed it. Joe Manchin voted with almost every Republican. It was every Republican and Joe Manchin voted to allow drilling in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Has there ever been a person who's more out of step with the beliefs of their own party than Joe Manchin? His own voters? Look, there's only one reason why you do it. Because this isn't a thing that's like, hey, is this going to be a net positive to potentially start drilling for oil in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge? Is that a net positive? No, that's not on the table. It's not like, hey, well, maybe that's a great thing. No, we know that's a horrible thing. So then why the fuck would Joe Manchin do that? Why would he do that? Well, it's very simple. he's taking about $325,000 from oil and gas. Guess what? When people give you $325,000 over the course of your career, you kind of like them, and you're kind of willing to vote on their side. So he is representing elites. He's representing his corporate overlords, not the people. Because everybody knows, hey man, West Virginia, it's time for the economy to help the people and to lift people out of poverty and bring them into the middle class. And the way to do that is not to be stuck on the technologies of the past. The way to do that is to move into the future. There are millions and millions of green technology jobs, renewable technology jobs that can be created in a new deal. There's millions of infrastructure jobs that could be created around the country. But yes, many of those jobs, including in West Virginia. So you can put people back to work with, yes, shovel-ready jobs if you just get off of the addiction of fossil fuels. But Joe Manchin is the most addicted to fossil fuels because they pay his campaign contributions. So it leads him to not be in favor of jobs for his own people in West Virginia and also ruin the environment in the meantime because he's open to oil drilling in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Joe, they didn't vote for that. They're not voting for that. They're voting for jobs. They're voting for a new deal. Remember when Bernie did a town hall on Chris Hayes' show in West Virginia and he got a room full of Trump voters to cheer for Medicare for All? And free college. Remember that? I do. A room full of West Virginia Trump voters gave a standing ovation to the idea of Medicare for All and free college. You want to know why? Because those are populists above everything else. Those are middle class, working class people who've been fucked over by the rigged system. And Joe Manchin is one of the guys who's part of that rigged system and wants to perpetuate that rigged system. Paula Jean Swearingen is the answer. We don't have an excuse anymore. There's a Justice Democrat running to unseat Joe Manchin. Do you understand that? A Justice Democrat running to unseat Joe Manchin and actually fight for the people of West Virginia. A wild idea, I know. A wild idea. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Let's get this done because this is just inexcusable. How many votes? There's so many votes where it's like every Republican votes for and Joe Manchin. All Republicans and Joe Manchin. Because he's beholden to the same corporate donors, and he is not listening to the people. Paula Jean Swearingen will. Okay, next. So there's a tool called the Voter Access Network, or VAN, and basically, to sum it up, it's a database where you can contact likely voters. So this is something that when people are running for office and when people are heavily involved in politics at the top level, they need VAN. They need it because you got to increase turnout, you got to let people hear your message, you got to let them know what you're about. And this is one of the most crucial tools to do that. So one of the benefits of running, because we've had this discussion before, hey, should we run as a third party? Should you run within the Democratic Party? What's the best way to really get populist left ideas implemented? Now, I consider everybody who's trying to do the third party route or even as an independent, they're my allies. As long as you agree with us on policy, of course, we'll unite with you and you're our allies. But our argument always was, and still to this day is, well, listen, it's rigged. The system is rigged. It's rigged against third-party people. Like closed primaries. I live in New York. There's closed primaries here. If I said, you know what, I'm done with the Democrats and I'm going to go join a third party, well, then I couldn't vote in the Democratic primary. And if you can't vote in the Democratic primary, you're throwing away your vote. I wouldn't have been able to vote for Bernie Sanders when it was Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton. I wouldn't be able to vote for actual Democrats in the primary, so I'm locking myself out of the system in a way. So that's why we've argued every step of the way, hey, look, there are benefits. And in many ways, it's necessary to run as a Democrat. Well, guess what? In some ways, they spit in your eye anyway. So they call it unity, unity, unity. Why just be Democrat? Why not be Democrats? Be Democrats. Okay. We say, okay, great. But we're going to take over the party. They go, bup, 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 bup. Well, we know that one of the benefits of running as a Democrat is that you can get access to the VAN, the Voter Access Network. But that's until Justice Democrats showed up and they're actually for populist left ideas. So now we know, this is breaking news from Justice Democrats headquarters. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was just shut out of VAN. Anthony Clark, another one of our candidates, shut out of VAN. Sarah Smith, running in Washington's 9th district, have all been denied. These people have all been denied access to VAN. I wonder why they would do that. Why would the Democrats do that? Well, here's an official statement from Justice Democrats, one of our top organizers and directors, Corbin Trent. He said, the DNC is doubling down on their commitment to building bridges across the aisle and ignoring or marginalizing the most energized wing of their own party. So in other words, oh, did we say unite? Did we say unite? Oh, did we say that, you know, you should run as Democrats and we should all work together? Well, that was until people who actually believe in populist left ideas took over. That was until we had these dangerous people show up who actually believe in Medicare for all and believe in free college and believe in a living wage and believe in ending the drug war and believe in ending the wars and believe in a new deal to bring millions of jobs to the U.S. We said unite until you actually were in favor of an agenda that snubs our corporate donors. And now that that's the case, well, I mean, look, we want to give you access to VAN, but we can't because of stuff and things. Oh, so I see how it's going to work. So that's how it's going to work. If you're a Democrat who actually is principled and has beliefs, you don't get access to all the benefits of being inside the party. In order to get access to those benefits, you need to be a Democrat and be a corporatist. You need to be a Democrat and be a neoliberal. You need to be a Democrat and be in favor of selling out to your donors. You need to be a Democrat and be in favor of the status quo. You need to be a member of the Clinton wing of the party. You can't be revolutionary. You can't want to truly reform the system to represent the will of the voters. Can't do it. Can't do it. The nerve of these people. The nerve. Listen, man, I told you all along. They keep screaming about unity. We said, okay, we're giving you unity. You want to see unity? Look at all the left groups that are working on the People's Platform. Our Revolution, People for Bernie, Fight for 15, Justice Democrats, Brand New Congress, National Nurses United, the list goes on and on. Democratic Socialists of America, there is actual uniting on the left. They don't want unity. If they wanted unity, they would say, yeah, Justice Democrats, come on, here, access to VAN, the Voter Access Network, so we can get increased turnout and help you get elected. They don't want unity. They want to keep the status quo, and they would rather lose to Republicans than have an actual populist leftist win. Do you understand that? How else are we supposed to interpret the fact that the DNC just purged Bernie supporters and Keith Ellison supporters? How are we supposed to interpret the fact that they just put Donna Brazile on the fucking rules committee when there was a giant scandal about how she broke the rules and gave Hillary Clinton debate questions before the debates? How are we supposed to interpret that? What you're saying is quite clearly business as usual, status quo. Sure, we just lost 1,000 seats using our approach, but maybe we lose 1,000 more. We continue this approach because, God forbid, people who are actually popular, like Justice Democrats, take over. This only makes me want to fight harder. They don't know who they're fucking with. They don't know who they're fucking with. The number of stories, first of all, there's been maybe 5% of the number of stories there should be about Justice Democrats in the mainstream media. And that's our biggest enemy, is indifference. If they don't cover us, more people don't learn about us, so we just need to spread the word through the grassroots even more. But they don't cover us, and then when they do cover us, what do they downplay us? Like that smug Politico article. where they say, oh, Bernie backers are largely giving Hillary Clinton-style politicians a pass. The populist left is giving the centrist wing of the Democratic Party a pass. What? Justice Democrats now has 29 candidates. Some of them are running against Republicans. Some of them are running against corporate Democrats. So we're going after everybody who's not in agreement with the American people on policy issues. But what they do is they don't cover us, or when they do cover us, they fucking downplay us. And they act like, they don't exist. They don't exist. Hear no evil, see no evil. Well, guess what? You're going to have to acknowledge us soon, because we are going to overtake you in a giant wave. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of when, and by the way, this comparison has nothing to do with policy. It has to do with the media. But when Donald Trump was literally put in the entertainment section by Huffington Post, because they said, you know what, this is a joke, this is a sideshow, it's not going anywhere, we're going to put it there. That's how they're treating Justice Democrats. We're the actual resistance to Trump. We actually take him on and fight for progressive ideas. But they act like, if they're not corporate sellouts, they don't count. Oh, we count, bitch. We count. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Do you want to show the establishment who's boss? Do you want to take it over? Or do you want to just have perpetual losses and have the Republicans run the country for decades? Because that's what's in front of us. Either we go left and we fight for the policies Americans actually want and Democrats win, or we keep losing to Republicans. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Let's do this, because this just means we have to work harder. Oh, hey, you can't have access to voters who would agree with you in the voter access network. Sorry, we're going to shut you out from that. Okay, well, then we're going to go around you. We're going to go around you, and we're going to get out the word, even though there are gigantic institutional disadvantages for us at this moment, because they're trying to do everything in their power to make that the case. Well, then we'll just overcome your next hurdle, and then you're going to put up three more after that, and we're going to overcome those two. And we're going to do it because we have the people on our side. Justice Democrats takes no corporate money, no PAC money. If they're a Justice Democrat, by definition, they can't take corporate money, they can't take PAC money. They only raise in small donations from you, the people, which means they will only represent you, the people. So make your donation today. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Let's go get them. Okay. All right, you know what? Let me take my final break now. And then when we come back, we should probably do the marijuana one, and then maybe the YouTube one, maybe Roy Moore. Yeah, we got a lot of stuff to get to, so don't go anywhere, baby. We will be right back, and yeah, I am going to munch on a granola bar or something because my stomach is making loud noises on air. All right, stay right there, guys. Marijuana legalization. This is one of those polls that I think they revisit every year, and you find a very clear trend is probably the simplest way to put it. So take a look. Wow. It's now a record high, 64% of the American people want to legalize marijuana. We're talking legalization for recreational use. 64%. Isn't it amazing the dichotomy between what the American people want and how many politicians are willing to say they support this? And by the way, this is one of the biggest problems with the Democratic Party, is that even when ridiculously high number of people are like, hey, we agree with the thing that you're supposed to be pushing, they're like, yes, we are not going to push that. It's still, many Democrats still think it's a third rail. It is clearly not a third rail when 64% of Americans are like, we want that. So what do you have? Like Bernie Sanders brings it up? Like, yeah, we should legalize that. You know, you probably Rand Paul, to his credit on the Republican side, you know, mentions this. But outside of that, and they don't even bring it up often. Because they probably feel like, well, it's like a side issue. It's not a fucking side issue. You know how many people's lives have been destroyed because of the drug war? You know how many people have actually died because there's a hot war going on the border? You know how many people are locked up and probably have no chance of ever getting a decent job again if they get out? If they get out, some people are locked up for life for nonviolent drug offenses. But this isn't a side issue. This is a criminal justice issue. And this is a freedom issue. So I don't know why. I mean, the Democrats, like, I mean, maybe it has something to do with the fact that both political parties take Big Pharma money. And Big Pharma doesn't want legal marijuana because, they view it as their competition. View it as, damn, we might not sell as many SSRIs and anti-anxiety medication and all this other stuff because, fuck, I mean, people like weed. So I don't know exactly what it is and why the Democrats don't stand up, but they should. And how about, what if politicians started unapologetically running on this platform? You know, I'm not saying, hey, it's the centerpiece and all the other issues are side issues. No, you make it one of your main issues along with the other issues. You know what would happen? They'd fucking win. They'd win. You do know Justice Democrats are in favor of legal recreational marijuana, right? And this isn't me just, oh, Justice Democrats, Justice Democrats, Justice Democrats. This isn't me to do a rah-rah for that, but it's me saying, why is this hard? It's not fucking hard. Can you not read a poll? Do you not know the upsides of legal marijuana? And for all the people on the right who small government, liberty and freedom, well then don't say that shit unless you understand that those words have implications and those words have, it has a meaning to it. So So you can't say I'm in favor of freedom, but by the way, I want to lock people up if they're caught with a substance and they're not hurting anybody. You can't. That's not. Then you're not in favor of freedom, period. That's it. You're not in favor of it. You could say it as a fucking bumper sticker or a slogan, but you're not in favor of it. You're just not. So 64% of people, hey, by the way, guess what? So 64% of Americans support it. Now we're at a point where it's even a majority of Republicans. 51% of Republicans now support legal recreational marijuana. And I haven't even mentioned the fiscal upsides. It is a multi-billion dollar industry now. In Colorado, it's surpassed almost all other industries. It's one of the biggest industries in Colorado now. You want to talk about deficit reduction and tax revenue and funding education? That's another thing that some of these states have done, is they do they fund education with the taxes that they levy on the legal marijuana sales. I mean, the upsides are endless. The downsides are nearly non-existent. So wow, there's a slight uptick in the number of people who ingest too much of an edible, for example, and they go to the emergency room, and the people at the emergency room laugh at them, and, you know, they basically, like, wait it out, and then they feel fine. Wow, the horror. You know how many people go to the emergency room now because of alcohol, which is a drug, by the way, and they actually die from alcohol poisoning? But nobody says, hey, we should try to ban alcohol again, because everybody goes, freedom, bitch. But with marijuana, when nobody dies, you still have people making that shitty argument. Oh, the slight uptick of people who ingested too much of an edible who might go to the emergency room and then be fine. Ah, the horror. Please. Okay. So there you have it, man. Americans are crystal clear. The American people, it's not even close. The American people aren't centrist. The American people aren't center-left. The American people are populist-left. The American people are Bernie Sanders. If you look issue for issue, I'm not saying they know that they know they would describe themselves, oh, I am populist left. No. Because, in fact, when you ask Americans, more of them actually say, I think I'm relatively conservative. But when you go issue for issue, policy issue for policy issue, they're Bernie Sanders. They agree with Bernie Sanders on almost everything, so including this. So Democrats, wake up. There's a reason why he's the most popular politician in the country. And stop pretending like these issues, people aren't on your side. I mean, another one is universal background checks for gun purchases. I don't hear any Democrat talk about that anymore, almost at all. 93% of Americans are with you. Gee, you think it might help politically if you bring it up every now and then? No, of course not. They hand the framing over to the Republicans. And the Republicans, by the way, they're hilarious because they pretend like everybody agrees with them when they don't. Like, the Republicans argue for shit that's stupid, but they do it in a cocky way, as like, yeah, I know everybody agrees with me on this. Yeah. And it's really dumb, but hey, you know what? That bravado, people sense the strength when the Republicans do their propaganda and their marketing, and there's something that's innately appealing and inherently appealing about the strength, even if they disagree with them on the issues. Whereas the Democrats are so mealy-mouthed, and they seemingly don't stand for anything, that people are like, ugh. When given the option between Republican and Republican light, that's the corporate Democrats, the American people pick Republicans. But when given Republican versus populist left, they go populist left. So let's give them that option, and let's stand up and fight for issues where people have strong opinions, but it's not even factored. It's not even taken into consideration. Okay. So YouTube is being sued. Take a look at this story. This is The Hill reporting. PragerU, a conservative educational site, I would take issue with calling it that, is suing Google and its subsidiary YouTube, accusing the video site of censoring its online videos because of their political leanings. The company filed the suit on Monday, saying that YouTube had been restricting some of their videos, which cuts them off to viewers with certain parental settings and prevents them from generating ad revenue. Quote, watch any one of our videos and you'll immediately realize that Google YouTube censorship is entirely ideologically driven, Dennis Prager, PragerU founder, said in a statement. For the record, our videos are presented by some of the finest minds of the Western world, including four Pulitzer Prize winners, former prime ministers, and professors from the most prestigious universities in America, he said. The lawsuit claims that Google and YouTube had told PragerU the restricted videos were found by content reviewers to be inappropriate for young audiences. The conservative site denied that the videos were improper or violated any of YouTube's policies and said in the filing that the explanations an obvious pretext to justify illegally discriminating against PragerU because of its conservative political perspective and identity. PragerU launched a petition demanding that YouTube remove the more than 30 videos from the restricted setting. The list includes provocative titles like "The Most Important Question About Abortion," "Where Are the Moderate Muslims?" and "Is Islam a Religion of Peace?" The lawsuit alleges that YouTube's content policies are vague and lack objective criteria, allowing the site to get away with cracking down on conservative voices. Hey, Dennis, here's the problem with that. Secular Talk. The Jimmy Dore Show. Humanist Report. David Pakman. Like, what, have you been under a fucking rock, douchebag? Like, how are you that much in your own bubble, sniffing your own farts, to the point where you haven't seen all of us left-wing YouTubers with our fucking hair on fire since Adpocalypse screaming about how our videos are being demonetized? Some of our videos are in restricted mode. Where were you? Where were you? How do you not realize that? And he's suing, he says, because they're Google and YouTube, they're censoring conservative voices. Did you do no research? Did you not look into this at all? What Dennis Prager did is, he didn't even say, hey, before I do this lawsuit, let me check to see if YouTube is also cracking down on left-wing voice. He didn't even do that. He fucking sued, claiming discrimination. He didn't even bother to check to see if there's discrimination against left-wingers as well. God, you're such a fucking embarrassment. And the research that went into your lawsuit is the same as going to your goddamn videos. Okay? I mean, what a joke you are. Listen, and for everybody who's already triggered at the things I've said thus far, you ready? Here's the part that you're going to agree with. Do I think Dennis Prager's video should be in restricted mode? No. Wow. Do I think his video should be demonetized? No. Wow. So I actually agree with Dennis Prager that they should allow the ads to run on his videos, and they should take the few, by the way, that are in a restricted mode. He's got way more videos than 30 on his channel, so he's complaining about a small chunk of them when others are not at all demonetized and others are not in restricted mode. But yes, I do think they should be taken off restricted mode, and I do think that they should be allowed to run ads on them. But for fuck's sake, Dennis, get your goddamn facts right, because they're not censoring conservatives. They're taking a giant sledgehammer to all of news and politics. That's what they're doing, including Secular Talk, including all the other left outlets that I pointed out. And then just a quick final point on this. This is the guy, Dennis Prager is the guy, who all the fucking time screams about the free market. Well, Dennis, under your own free market ideology, of course YouTube has the ability. YouTube would have the right to censor only conservatives under a free market. Do you not understand that? That's the way a free market works. They're a private company. They get to decide, hey, we don't want any conservative voices on here. If they were to ban all conservative voices, you would have no fucking recourse. And that's according to your own ideology. That's not what I'm saying my opinion is. According to your own ideology, hey, free market, man, they get to do whatever they want. They get to make whatever decisions they want. They can fire whoever they want for whatever reason. They can censor whoever they want for whatever reason. That's the free market. But now, when it's convenient, all of a sudden he's like, what's a First Amendment public utility? We need to regulate not just the internet as a public utility. We need to regulate YouTube, a private company that's on the internet, as a public utility. Well, fucking welcome to what we've been saying all along. And by the way, look up Dennis Prager's opinion on net neutrality. back when Obama was implementing the net neutrality rules to keep the internet exactly as free and open as it was, to say, hey, you can have internet service providers slow down the speed to one place or another place, to one site or another site. Dennis Prager said, no, we need to allow internet service providers to slow down the speed, to control the internet more. What an idiot you are. Because you don't even understand that under the policy that you favor, internet service providers can legally say, we don't like Dennis Prager because he's conservative. We don't like Dennis Prager because he didn't pay his bribes to get the fast internet speed. So now we're going to slow down Prager U. We're going to slow down anything Dennis Prager related because, hey, he didn't want to play ball. He's saying things we don't want him to say. He's conservative. He's not paying his bribes. So what am I going to do? I'm going to slow down, the speed to Dennis Prager. That's what you wanted. You wanted more corporate control of the internet. You wanted that. And then now when there is more corporate control of the internet, all of a sudden, oh, no, public utility, free speech. He's literally trying to make a First Amendment case. Guys, listen, when it comes to the principle of free speech, I agree 100%. But any fucking college schmuck taking a course on constitutional law will tell you right away, the First Amendment is that the government can't censor speech. YouTube is not the government. So they're allowed to legally say, we don't want any conservatives, we don't want this person, we don't want that person, we're going to cherry pick all day long, and you have no fucking recourse. Because that's not the way the First Amendment works, that's not the way the Constitution works. You don't know that? So he's making a case on the First Amendment. This is not First Amendment grounds, even though I agree with him and I want them to run the ads on his channel and all that stuff. But he's making a case on the First Amendment. This is not a First Amendment case, it's just not. It's just not. He's trying to make a case on First Amendment grounds, and he doesn't even understand the basics of it. And he's trying to say that it's just conservatives who are being censored and demonetized when that is objectively, empirically, overwhelmingly factually inaccurate. So it's the same kind of dim, totally unresearched garbage you would expect from a right-wing YouTube channel. Okay. Let me try to get in a few more. Well, I have 15 minutes, so I probably will be able to get all this in, but let's see. Alabama's Republican Senate nominee is an absolute lunatic. So Talking Points Memo has an article on him. They say, Alabama GOP Senate nominee Roy Moore said late last year that the Supreme Court's decision legalizing gay marriage was even worse than the notorious 1857 Dred Scott ruling that upheld slavery. What? Moore, a hard right former Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice, has twice been removed from office for refusing to follow the rule of law, the second time for ordering probate judges in his state to disobey the Supreme Court's Obergefell ruling legalizing gay marriage. Last November, he said that the decision was even worse than one that scholars widely consider the worst Supreme Court decision in U.S. history. In 1857, the United States Supreme Court did rule, this is what he said, in 1857, the United States Supreme Court did rule that black people were property. Of course, that contradicted the Constitution, and it took a civil war to overturn it. But this ruling in Obergefell is even worse in a sense because it forces not only people to recognize marriage other than that institution ordained by God and recognized by nearly every state in the Union, it says that you now must do away with the definition of marriage and make it between two persons of the same gender or leading on, as one of the dissenting justices said, to polygamy, to multi-partner marriages. Moore said in a podcast interview last November, shortly after he was suspended without pay from the court. he said that when the Supreme Court basically ruled, hey, black people are still property, if a black person from the South, a slave, escapes to the North, that person is still a slave. And the property owner in the South gets to have their property back. He's saying that that decision was not as bad as legalizing gay marriage. He doesn't even provide an argument. His argument comes down to God, God. Hey, you know what? If you take his standard, he has a point. Because guess what? In the Bible, there is slavery. There are actually rules in the Bible as to how you're supposed to treat your slaves and as to how the slave is supposed to treat their master. So that's in the Bible. When it comes to marriage, now, I hate to burst his bubble, but there's all different types of marriage in the Bible. He says polygamy as if it's like, oh, polygamy. Polygamy's terrible. Polygamy's in the Bible. Polygamy's all over the Bible. So you're not even going, I guess, by your Bible. So maybe he doesn't have a point. But polygamy's in the Bible. Men castrating themselves and living celibate lives are in the Bible. Daughters raping their father is in the Bible. So there are some biblical values for your ass. But yes, there are passages that say homosexuality is wrong. So what he's saying is, hey, man, look, that was it. Marriage between a man and a woman is from God. That's what it is. So that's the fact that we're now saying two men can marry each other, two women can marry each other, that's worse than people being owned as property and having no rights, having no freedom, having their family members raped by the slave owner, being forced to work until they die at the age of 43 from being overworked and underfed. Can you imagine how warped your mind has to be? How morally repugnant and brainwashed you have to be to come to that conclusion? That saying, hey, if we treat people equally under the law, if we say, hey, if you love somebody, you get the same tax rights, same tax benefits, same legal status as somebody who marries who are heterosexual. Can you imagine looking at that and going, I'm so outraged by that, that that's worse than slavery. And this is the guy who's the Alabama Senate GOP nominee. By the way, he also thinks homosexuality should just be illegal. So it's so funny. And these guys are the guys who fearmonger about Sharia law. He literally did that recently. He's like, oh, Sharia law is coming to America. It's terrible. It's scary. You believe in Sharia. You just believe in Christian Sharia. You believe, agree 100% with the fundamentalist Muslims who say homosexuality should be illegal, just being gay should be illegal. So these are the issues that Roy Moore's, you know, focused on. And I always find it hilarious when people refer to Roy Moore as a populist. I've seen that in a couple articles. The fuck are you talking about? Populism is when a politician says, for example, hey, let's not outsource American jobs. Let's not do these dumbass free trade deals that end up screwing over the middle class. That's populism. Populism is having popular beliefs on economic issues, is agreeing with the people on those issues. They're trying to conflate fucking Christian theocracy and fundamentalism with that, Christian Sharia with populism. Don't be ridiculous. But this is how extreme he is. He'd rather have a system that has slavery than gay marriage. That's literally the implication of what he said here. That it's worse to have gay marriage than slavery. Okay. All right. Next. Now, I've been warning you about deifying monsters in the Trump era. The most recent example of that is Jeff Flake, who's resigning after the end of his term and not running for re-election. He gave an anti-Trump speech. Now, he voted with Trump 90% of the time. 90%. But now people who are part of the Mick resistance are saying, oh, he's with us. He's on our side now. So this idea of deifying monsters is now leading to the chickens coming home to roost. Because look at this embarrassment. Poll, majority of Democrats have a favorable view of George W. Bush. Majority. Listen, if it was a plurality, that would be bad enough. A majority of Democrats now have a favorable view of George W. Bush. Do you know what George W. Bush's approval rating was when he left office? 22%. That's not 22% among Democrats. It's 22% overall. He had a 22% approval rating. Now, he has a 51% approval rating among Democrats, a 51% approve, 42% disapprove. That's an Economist YouGov poll. Do you know how embarrassing that is? George W. Bush approved torture, opened Guantanamo Bay, got rid of due process and habeas corpus. The Patriot Act ripped up the Constitution. You no longer have a protection from unreasonable search and seizure and a right to privacy. The NSA collects all your metadata all the time. He waged an illegal war against a country that didn't attack us, killed a minimum 200,000 civilians. By the way, that war will cost $7 trillion, the war in Iraq. Add a couple trillion more for Afghanistan. Started the war on terror, still going on today. Thousands of Americans died. Countless people have been injured. By the way, invading Iraq led to the rise of ISIS. There wasn't even Al-Qaeda in Iraq until we went into Iraq. There are more terrorists now than when he started the war on terror. So you have a guy who broke the Middle East, is responsible for the death of at least hundreds of thousands of civilians, did torture, violates the Nuremberg Tribunal and the Geneva Conventions on a daily basis when he was president, crashed the global economy with the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. I don't know how Bush could have been worse. I don't know if it's possible to sit down. I guess, no, I stand corrected. If he nuked a random country, yeah, he could have been worse. Yeah, he could have been worse if he also added a war with Iran, which, by the way, they were trying to do. He could have been worse if they were trying to nuke North Korea, if they started another war with North Korea. That's how he could have been worse. But outside of that, he's as bad as it gets. It doesn't get any worse. He's literally one of the worst presidents in U.S. history. Deregulation all over the place, the collapse of the middle class, and now it's not that he has a 51% approval rating overall. He has a 51% approval rating among Democrats. Why? He said some words against Trump. You guys do know it's an option to dislike Trump and George W. Bush? Just to let you know, that's a thing. In fact, that's my position. I dislike them both because of the policies they push for and how bad they are. I dislike them both. I dislike them both. You do know that's an option, right? And you do know that just because one war criminal says another war criminal is bad, that doesn't mean the other war criminal is good. That's like Charles Manson says some shit against Gacy or whatever the other name of the serial killer was. And everybody's like, up to Charles Manson. Charles Manson, welcome to the resistance. No, 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 no. But the reason why this is so upsetting to me is because it shows me that half of the Democratic Party are just hopelessly partisan hacks. That's what that shows me. That's exactly what this proves. It doesn't just show me it. It proves it. Because what they're saying is policy irrelevant. Because if they cared about policy, of course they wouldn't have a fucking favorable opinion of George W. Bush. Policy irrelevant. It's all about teams. And now George W. Bush is no longer on the red team. He's on the blue team because he's saying things against the red team leader, President Trump. Well, if that's how you view politics, politics ain't for you. Politics is above your fucking intellectual capacity because this is about people's lives and how their lives are affected by decisions that are made and policies that are implemented. And if you can't keep your eye on the ball for that, that's embarrassing, it's pathetic, it's disgusting, and it's shameful. Okay, let's see. I have 2 minutes left, which is not enough time for this next story. So, we're going to have to call it a day, skis, and I will do this story tomorrow. So, all right, I love you guys. Thanks for listening. You know the deal. Tomorrow, same time, same place. And everybody enjoy the rest of your day. Peace. Mwah.